AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Hurricane Ian is a huge, nasty storm, and it's coming ashore right now. USDA is doing survey work for the October crop production report. Let's talk about how September's weather might have changed corn and soybean yields. And let's find out what is occupying think time in this week's Farmer Forum.
Live from the safety of the nation's nurturing midsection via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk This Morning. We'll begin with Dr. Michael Cordonier from Corn and Soybean Advisor. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Ben Renshie and Michelle Jones. Right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, say hello to the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis. Thank you very much, buddy. We got a little chilly in the area overnight, as expected.
That we did.
I don't know if it was cold enough long enough to do a lot of damage in our immediate area, but I do know that it you get up a little bit further north of us, guys are talking about not only did it get them this morning, but it looks like there's going to be another shot of frost coming tonight. Corn crop probably wasn't 100% ready for it, Davis, and now we've got another issue that we need to figure out. So it's a good thing that we've got Dr. Michael Cordonier on the show today. We'll talk about what September weather has done for corn and soybean yields, and we're going to have to discuss just how much of this crop may have been at risk to some yield cuts because of the cold temperatures that we had this morning, and looks like we will get again tomorrow morning in some key areas. So,
really talked to a buddy of mine last night. He just happened to be driving by in his truck and stopped over to say hello. He'd been down to the co-op, had the moisture level checked on his corn. He's running about 24.4, and he's okay. Now thinking to himself, do I want to pay to dry this? Do I want to leave it out in the field for a couple of more days? I have a feeling that may be an internal monologue that's going on in a lot of machine sheds right now.
Yeah, I'll bet you are exactly right. If the corn is standing, it's cheaper to let it dry. If the corn is standing, if there's a risk that isn't going to be the case going forward, well, then it usually makes sense to go ahead and pay for that drying and get it out of the field when you can. So, a lot of ground that we need to cover today, and we've got Margie coming up in that Farmer Forum. All right, let's go ahead and get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, Florida is preparing for the arrival of Hurricane Ian after the intensifying storm knocked out Cuba's entire electric grid early on Tuesday. About 2.5 million people along the U.S. Gulf Coast have been urged to evacuate. While estimates are being revised by the hour, Ian will likely move ashore this evening south of Tampa Bay, somewhere between Sarasota and Naples, as a potentially deadly Category 4 hurricane. Chip, I'm not a seafaring man myself, but I do find it very interesting. It's a very exotic sort of scene to see live views of different parts of Florida. Yeah. And some of those places, the storm surge has already come ashore. It just looks very ominous.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, some of the video from Key West was crazy. Yep. And have you seen any pictures of Tampa Bay and the bay itself?
Not of the bay itself, no.
It's being pulled out to ocean.
Oh, boy, I don't like the sound of that.
Out to the Gulf.
Yeah.
So when it comes back, that's where the fear of the real damage is. With the storm surge that may come along with it. So this is a, like I said in the open, dude, this is a nasty one. It may be top five all time storms to hit the U.S.
Well, the S&P 500 is now 24.3% below its record set in January, while the Dow is 21.2% below its all-time high. The NASDAQ has fallen more than 33% since hitting a record in November. The Federal Reserve calculates American households lost $9 trillion in wealth in the first 6 months of 2022 due to the stock market plunge. Meanwhile, yields on 2-year and 10-year treasuries are on pace for the biggest yield gains through the first three quarters of any year since 1981.
10-year went through 4%. That's one of the questions that I'm going to be asking Michelle and Ben. How is the interest rate environment changing the way they're doing business?
Well, China's currency hit its weakest ever offshore trading level against the U.S. dollar, with the yuan falling below 7.2 to the dollar for the first time since a system for trading the currency outside mainland China was launched more than a decade ago. The move caps a fall of about 12% for the offshore yuan against the dollar this year, despite repeated attempts by China's central bank to support its currency. European countries are on high alert after mysterious blasts hit two Russian gas pipelines this week, fueling suspicions of potential sabotage. Although neither pipeline had been operational, they both held gas that is now leaking into the Baltic Sea. An energy expert at the Eurasia Group speculated, quote, the probability would be zero that this is accidental or natural. Chip, you alluded to that yesterday.
The pipes didn't just wear out at the same time. No way, no how.
No. Well, Russia has declared victory in a series of referendums that took place over the past week in the occupied regions of Ukraine. Legislation to keep the federal government here in the U.S. running past Friday passed a critical test last evening, staving off a shutdown threat. And sources have told Axios White House officials are weighing the possible departure of Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen after the November elections as part of a potential cabinet shakeup. Chip.
Yeah, that won't change anything in the with what's going on with interest rates or the economy or anything. No question about that. Okay, thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. Good morning, Margie.
Good morning, Chip.
All right, so what's new? What are you keeping your eye on?
Oh, I've got some groovy news this morning, if I can use that retro adjective. And that is the ag tech startup Innerplant has received a $16 million fundraise, and they are working towards developing transgenic soybeans that really are a mood ring for what's stressing them out. Okay. So they've identified two different color signals, green and red, which can be monitored via remote sensing or even on a piece of machinery. And first, they're working again on soybeans and detecting fungal sensors. So once that plant could be infected with a disease, it would then bring this fluorescence of a particular color just within days to indicate what might be stressing or reducing its yield. Now, what's interesting about this, Chip, is it's unlocking another way to do plant-by-plant management, which is a term we've used before from our friends at John Deere. And yes, John Deere led this round of funding for Innerplant. So very interesting that we've got a machinery company now helping elevate technology that could be, again, based in a plant.
That is absolutely crazy. And obviously what we're looking to do what Deere is looking to do is advance that technology to bring value to the equipment and the technology and the equipment that they've got on the market. This is pretty fascinating stuff, Margie.
And one of those questions is always, how quickly is this coming? So for 2023, Innerplant is hoping to finalize its validation of those soybean fungal sensors. But in 2024, they're going to roll it out to their 75 beta test farmers.
Wow. That's going to come quick. No question. All right, Margie, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chip.
You bet. Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. Check it out at www.thedailyscoop.com. We've got Dr. Michael Cordonier up next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
It's too late in the year to go fishing in the dark, Chip. Is it
not
past the season?
Absolutely not.
I
don't think it
out
ever
there
gets
once
too late.
Really?
Year for that. No.
You're probably going to want to bring a jacket, I would think.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. You're going to want to do that, that's for sure. Found out recently that that is my granddaughter's favorite song.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Little Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. Yeah. I love that.
You know, Kenny Loggins started out in the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. I didn't know
did
that.
Did he really?
I just found that out yesterday. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm kind of on a Kenny Loggins trip right now.
Oh, well, have fun with that.
He's fantastic.
That's
an unbelievable
groovy, man.
Talent. Yeah. It is groovy. It is groovy. Pork chops and apple shosh.
All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us this morning. That is Davis Michelson. And it is time for another conversation with Dr. Michael Cordonier from Soybean and Corn Advisor. Michael is also the Pro Farmer Crop Consultant. Michael, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, Chip. Glad to be with you.
Glad that you are here. So what's your thoughts on September as we get into the final couple of days here? Did it help or hurt corn and soybean yields?
Well, my current soybean yield is 50 bushels per acre, and I have a neutral bias. And if you look at the western corn belt, you know, the harvest is progressing faster in the west, places like Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, because it's been drier over there, and slower in the east. And we got the same pattern for corn. You know, I got my corn yield at 169. Now, I have a neutral to slightly lower bias for corn. And for my soybeans, it's a neutral bias. But the pattern is the same for both. You know, faster in the west and more volatility in the yields because of the dryness, of course, early in the summer, and better in the east and slower in the east. So we'll see. Now, I think September was not the best month because they got the dryness in the western corn belt, but it's not a catastrophe either. So I think the USDA will trim their numbers a little bit in October, especially for the corn. I'm not so certain, though, about the soybeans. So that's why I have a neutral bias on the soybeans.
Okay. So you said 50 bushels per acre is your national average yield estimate on soybeans, and 169, is that right, on corn?
Correct.
Okay. What about on acres, Michael? There was some movement on acres in the September crop production report by USDA, both to the downside. Do you see any potential that that downtrend is going to be, that we're going to get some of those acres back?
I don't think so. And in fact, I might be contrarian here. They might go down a little bit more because they had the corn harvested area, you know, traditionally like 93%. So they didn't reduce that from the planted. And I think we might lose a few acres more because of abandonment. We knew there's a lot of abandonment in Texas and some of the southern areas. I think there might be a little bit more in Kansas and Nebraska than what was accounted for. So I'm actually using a little bit fewer corn acres than the USDA. Soybeans, I'll just take their number for soybeans. I'm not so confident one way or the other for the soybean acreage.
Okay. So what does that put your crop at then for corn?
Well, for corn, I have the crop at, hang on a second here.
Yep.
I got it at 13.6 billion bushels. And then for soybeans, I got a 4.3.
All right. So you're about 350 million bushels below USDA on the corn crop estimate. And on soybeans, USDA in September was at 4.378. So, you know, just call it 75 million bushels below USDA on the bean crop estimate. Man, those are numbers with the supply side of things, or on the supply side, that will tighten up the ending stocks even more. It's going to be interesting to watch and see how it does play out, especially since USDA is doing the survey work right now. What about this frost, Michael? Does it concern you?
A little bit. You know, we had a frost. I didn't here in Chicago. We didn't have a frost last night, but right now at O'Hare, it's only 50 degrees, so it might nip a little bit of the late corn and the late soybeans. And there's a little bit of frost earlier last week in North Dakota. It might do minor damage. But, you know, it's about the time of the year for a frost. So I'm not too concerned about that. Now, the crops are generally slower than average in their maturity, especially in the eastern area. So, but I don't think the frost got too far east. So I'm not too concerned about it. But it might trim a little bit.
Okay. You know, looking at the USDA crop progress reports, and I know there's wiggle room in these numbers, a lot of wiggle room, but on the corn mature, they had Minnesota as of September 25th at 49%, Michigan at 39%. I wonder if it, well, let's get Wisconsin in there too at 42% and Iowa at 63%. I've got some guys that are telling me this morning that, you know, maybe this morning isn't going to hurt it that much, but if we get it again tomorrow and it does end the growing season with the milk line at 70%, something like that, it's probably going to take the top end off the yields up there. So,
well, I agree. I agree. Especially if you have more than just one time. Yeah. So, you know, maybe my 169 might be okay for corn yield.
Yeah. Yeah. Beans, the guys seem to be saying, hey, bring it on.
Yeah, mature, get the crop more mature so they can harvest it more.
Exactly, exactly. Maybe kill some of the weeds that are out there too, and especially that volunteer corn that's in so many of the fields. My gosh.
Exactly.
It's nuts. Okay, let's go to Brazil, Michael. We're 2 weeks into the growing season, roughly. How are things looking?
Okay, Brazil, as of late last week, was about 2% planted, a little bit ahead of average. The state of Paraná, 9% planted, Mato Grosso, 2%. Now, the weather's been pretty good in central areas. They're getting some good rains in places like Mato Grosso do Sul, Paraná, São Paulo, maybe even too much rain in Paraná, but I wouldn't worry about that yet. They're a little bit on the dry side in Rio Grande do Sul. Now, the forecast for October, November, December is calling for drier than normal in southern Brazil and normal to a little bit above normal precip central northeastern Brazil. This is a typical La Nina pattern. Now, they had predicted, you know, some pretty good rains in September, and that's what we're getting. But the longer range forecast calling for a drying out going into October, November, December. So we'll see if that happens or not. This is the third spring in a row that you've had La Nina conditions. The first two ended up being very disappointing on both corn and soybean yields. So now this is the third one, and La Nina's pretty strong out there. So we'll see what happens.
You know,
but
it
actually,
seems like
I'm a little bit more concerned about Argentina.
Okay.
You know, Argentina, the corn is 3% planted. That is significantly below average. No soybeans planted yet. They had a very dry summer, fall, and winter, and now they got a dry spring. And I think it might switch some corn acres over to soybeans in Argentina. So we'll have to watch that real carefully going forwards.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. You know, it seems like most crop watchers are assuming a full yield recovery on soybeans, even with La Nina still in place. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, you know, I always start off the season with assuming, you know, normal weather going forwards. And I got some big numbers, you know, 151 million tons for soybeans in Brazil, 50 million tons for soybeans in Argentina. but that all assumes normal weather. And we know the area went up in Brazil, and the area for soybeans are going to go up for the first time in 7 years in Argentina. But you have to have the weather to cooperate. And being a third year of La Nina, I would say this thing. I look at it this way. My numbers right now might be the high water mark of the season for South America. We'll have to kind of wait and see. But El Nino is still out there, so we have to kind of see what happens with the weather.
Yeah, it cost us like 25 million tons of beans a year ago. So it is not an insignificant threat to that Brazilian crop at all. So we've got to watch as it continues to develop. Michael, it's always good to talk with you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Sure, anytime.
All right, very good. That is Dr. Michael Cordonier. He is with Soybean and Corn Advisor, also the Pro Farmer Crop Consultant. Michael and I started working together, I believe it was either 1997 or 98. So we've been talking about crop potential together for a long time. Okay, let's get another crop report. We've got Ben from Iowa and Michelle Jones from Montana coming up next on the Farmer Forum right here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
And joining us now, ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, not a lot of movement in, well, I shouldn't say that, because corn's traded on both sides of unchanged already today. What's going on?
Well, corn has competing influences. The wheat market sharply higher this morning, 20-plus cent gains in the winter wheat contracts and not quite that much in spring wheat. And then the soy complex, it's under pretty heavy pressure with double-digit losses in soybeans and soy oil more than 100 points lower, soy meals lower as well. So corn's kind of caught in the middle this morning, and as a result, we are seeing that two-sided trade.
Now, what's got wheat all fired up?
Well, a couple things. The Russian situation, obviously, the tension seems to be growing there and seem to be moving closer to annexation of four of those territories in Ukraine. And so that's kind of got the market's attention. And then the other thing is the dollar, while it's still very strong, has pulled back from its highs earlier today and now trading more than 400 points lower. So that's adding to some of the buyer interest in wheat this morning.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. Absolutely. All right. Take us over to the livestock trade. I mean, I'm feeling that there's a glimmer of hope for the hog market right now.
Yeah, possibly. I don't know. It's been beaten up here recently, just ugly price action the first 2 days this week. That came after some pretty ugly price action late last week. And so technically, it's due for a correction here. We'll see if we can garner that or not into the close. And then the cattle market, it's weaker. Feeder cattle are under pressure because of the modest strength in corn so far. But live cattle, they're expecting weaker cash prices now in cash negotiations.
Gotcha. All right, Brian, thank you so much. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. It's time for the Farmer Forum, which is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. Learn more about it. Go to www.agweb.com/ACAM. Let's bring them in. Ben Renchi from Iowa. Ben, welcome back. How are you, man?
Good morning, Chip. Nice harvest morning here in Iowa.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to get more about that here in just a moment. But let's bring in Michelle Jones as well. Michelle is a farmer out in Montana. Michelle, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
You bet. Glad that you're here, Michelle. How are things looking out in Montana?
Hot and dry, unfortunately. Really hot. Less emphasis on the dry for us, but because it is so hot, it's been a pretty rough fall, really.
So what kind of an impact does the heat have on your operation out there, Michelle?
It's really slowing down winter wheat seeding. We are seeding, but at a pretty slow pace. And there are some people that have not even started just because their ground is so hard that you can't put the drills in the ground. And even if you could, it would do so much damage to the discs that it's not even worth it. So it's kind of overall, the state is actually ahead of normal, but it is impacting some seeding decisions for sure. Like today, it's supposed to be 90 degrees and average is roughly 68. So it's just been super, super hot and dry, and it's hard on surface moisture condition.
Yeah. Yeah. What's it done to your pasture in the rangeland up there?
Nothing good. We did get some good rains in late June that really helped out the pasture conditions, but they've certainly deteriorated in a hurry. There's going to be a lot of people that are pulling them weaning calves and putting those cows on feed, which is unfortunate because feed's pretty expensive still.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Ben, you said that it's a beautiful harvest morning. It sure feels like it. Is everything ready to go, or did last night's temperatures or this morning's temperatures maybe take the top end off?
Well, we got close, but it didn't stop a thing. It's just a beautiful harvest morning. We got a little white in the low spots, but things are still going. I'd say about 25% of our crops are ready to harvest. Guys are picking and choosing fields of soybeans. Corn, it all depends on how much corn drying capacity you have. We're getting to black layer, but, most guys don't want to dry 25% and above corn. So that's where we're at.
What's your level of optimism? We've been talking about Eastern Iowa and Northeast Iowa in particular for a while about how good of a growing season we've had. Are you still pretty optimistic?
Well, Chip, I've been on all sides of this. This obviously is the year where it's our turn. My heart goes out to everybody who's had a more challenging season. We didn't get in the field this spring as early as we'd like, but we had the weather and the heat to get us there. Never short of moisture here between Waterloo and Cedar Rapids, where I farm. And if our first results are indicative, it's going to be a best ever harvest.
Okay. All right. Have you gotten into the beans? Are you talking about beans as well?
Yeah, we're in both crops. We caught up with all the beans we had ready yesterday. Beans have been exceptional for us. I would say 10 to 15% above APH. Now, once again, I'm going to say it's finally our turn. We've been on the other end of the spectrum enough times. And and we are not that large of area that's had this kind of growing condition.
Right.
Corn is very promising. We're going to see the low ends of our fields bring up our field averages. The top end is great. It's above APH by a good shot, but all our marginal field areas, those areas with low organic matter, low corn suitability rating here in Iowa, low water holding capacity, lower are producing, and those areas, instead of being 140 or 50 on the yield map, are going to be 200. And so that's really going to bring up field averages in my local area.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right. Good stuff. Good stuff, Ben. Michelle, I've got a few things that I had on the list that I wanted to talk about, but then I started realizing I've got Michelle Jones and Ben Renchi on the show today. I just want to know what you're thinking about, Michelle. When you think about this year's business environment, what it means for next year. What occupies your think time?
That's a good question. I think a lot of, you know, what occupies most of my think time is, you know, how we position ourselves heading into what is very clearly a higher interest rate environment. You know, one that obviously I've never seen in my lifetime. Being born in 84, I missed the last high interest rate environment. Yep. And how we position those, you know, our the decisions that we make to one, to take advantage of some lower interest rates, as well as, you know, avoid having excess operating debt out there as those interest rates are climbing. And what I mean by that is, like, we have two Baylors that they're getting on the older side, but we had no plans to replace them. But because of the high trade-in value, I mean, insanely high trade-in value, and then Matthew Ferguson was still offering pretty low interest rates, you know, we locked them, we sold them both, traded them off, and put them in the longest note we could do, and the interest rate was still below 5%, because that seems like you're protecting some cash outlays. You know, I'm not spending a ton of money, but we also did some major updates. And so looking at those opportunities to do that, as well as just opportunities to lock in, you know, I've got wheat locked in for 2023. I will very likely lock in some 2024. As well as locking in those inputs if at all possible. Our fertilizer for 2023 has actually been locked in for a couple months. So being really aggressive on that and looking at, like, what is the margins, you know, once they're locked in, did we sell wheat, and where we can protect those margins going forward, even in a high price environment.
Got it. Good stuff, Michelle. Ben, what about you? What is occupying your thought processes?
Well, I'm thinking about putting together my plan for the next upcoming year. And when it comes to inventory, if I can buy inputs, if I can buy chemistry, if I can buy fertilizer, if I can lock in fuel, I'm going to go ahead and do it, because 100-150 basis point move in interest rates are nothing compared to the price increases or the challenge if you just don't have availability. So we're layering those things in right now for next year. Now, land, that's a different story. We've made some purchases this year, but only very strategic. And we've even sold non-strategic land to reduce the amount of exposure here. I think if you want to be very careful about changing your cost structure for the next 20 to 30 years on land payments at this size. I was a teenager in the 70s and a young farmer in the 80s. I've seen this story before. So machinery, I don't know. I don't have to worry about machinery because nothing's available. I mean, if you can put your name on a list, you can bid an auction, but chances are you're not, I'm not worried. We're just figuring out how to run with what we have. And then, just to vary from what Michelle said, maybe because of my age and perspective, I'm finding it entertaining. The young people in my operation kind of cut their teeth the last half a dozen years when there's very low volatility in the grain market. And they're aggressive to make sales. And I find that my personality is, wait 2 days and the narrative changes. You know, the Black Sea's back producing grain. The Black Sea's gone. We're going to have natural gas. We're going to have fertilizer. We're not going to have fertilizer. Wait for the extremes to make your sales or purchases, because we're at a whole new volatility plane.
Ben, I've spoken to some farmers around here in my local area just the last couple of days. They're having trouble getting just a bid out of their preferred suppliers on fertilizer. Are you able to collect bids up there? Have you checked into that at all?
Well, so far so good. You know, we're a larger producer, so we command some attention in the marketplace. So maybe that has something to do with it. But what it points to, the issue is retailers are just reluctant to fill up at these price levels. You pretty much have to guarantee you'll take the product and pay for it to get access. Asking a retailer to fill up their bins and then put them in a position where you might or might not take the product just isn't going to work right now.
Right. Michelle, what about you? Availability of inputs, availability of equipment. Is there any scarcity in Montana?
There's not so much scarcity on inputs as of right this second. We've been able to secure all of our fertilizer and chemical. Now, equipment for sure. Even the two balers that I just mentioned, when we bought them early, the indications from the dealer was that there's no problems getting balers delivered. That swathers is very, very difficult. In fact, people that ordered last year are still waiting because of the chip shortage. But now that we've actually signed the papers, they have made very clear they are not taking our trade-in balers because they are not confident they can get us a new one by next June. So there is still certainly some fluidity in the equipment market and some challenges in what they can get in new out of those facilities.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So I think what I'm hearing is that for Michelle, it lengthened the timeline on planning for Michelle. And Ben, these headline-driven markets, it does have an impact on your marketing and your marketing decisions. I want to talk about that a little bit more when we come back. The other thing that I want to talk about, guys, $2.8 billion in investment from USDA into climate-smart farming practices. I want to get your take on if that is a good thing.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Welcome back. Let's jump right back into the Farmer Forum. We've got Ben Renchie from Iowa, Michelle Jones from Montana. Michelle, I know you've got a question for Davis. What do you got?
I do have a question for Davis. As we were talking about fertilizer and availability, Davis, what's your thoughts on the impact of Hurricane Ian and the fact that Tampa does have sizable fertilizer infrastructure there and potential disruptions coming from the storm?
Well, that's a really good question. A lot of phosphate comes out of that Tampa area, obviously, phosphate produced down there. Word is that those facilities were built to be hurricane resistant. As much as infrastructure can be built in such a way that it can withstand a certain amount of storm, those have been. I guess the best answer that I could say is they'll probably be okay.
Yeah.
You know, there's also
impacts
the question
on the transportation system is going to, it could be more
transport
critical
is probably
actual
going to be the bigger concern. Yes,
right.
Exactly. Well, and think about transporting ammonia through the Caribbean to get to Tampa to add to that phosphate rock. Now as we're cooking DAP and MAP and triple super and all that sort of stuff. Those are my biggest concerns. Right now we're seeing retail prices come down here in the Midwest. So I'm going to keep an eye on that very closely, but should be all right. Yeah.
Good stuff. All right.
Yeah, for sure.
Chip, if I can offer something here, I'm just back from a board position I have with Crop Life America. And Crop Life America is the U.S. pesticide association with close ties to the fertilizer industry as well, because the participants tend to be in both. I had a great chance to visit with the president of the Florida Fertilizer and Agrichem Association, and their primary concern was the loss of productivity. That even if the facilities aren't damaged, you have to shut the system down to go in and out of this, you know, and restart it, reboot it. So there'll definitely be some sort of hiccup or yeah. You know, sorry to be cliche, supply chain issue here.
Right, right.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think we're seeing it in the ethanol too right now, because we took the tanker cars off of the rail in advance of what was the potential for a strike. And that meant shutting down facilities, and we're having a devil of a time getting them refired, guys, because ethanol production in the latest reporting period was off sharply again, second week in a row. So those supply chain issues matter, and it absolutely is a concern going forward. Ben, you mentioned the headline-driven markets that we're dealing with right now. Has it changed your marketing approach?
Yeah, I mean, I put in orders. I mean, I look at the charts. I talk to my advisors, and I'm just not going to take a Wednesday price. I'm gonna set targets, and the volatility more than often helps me get them achieved.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Good stuff. Michelle, what about you? Has it changed your approach to marketing?
I'm not going to say that it's necessarily changed my approach. Like, I do have targets, and really it's, for me, I want to be well above or above whatever I budgeted for in the, you know, in my budget cycle. And that's really all that I care about, is locking in that profitability. So I will tend to be more aggressive. Whereas my dad, who is closer to Ben's age, he certainly, he'll fit in orders and hope he catches the top of the market, or, you know, he does a lot of puts and calls to try and take advantage of some of that volatility. And I think that's just a product of where he is in his career, where he doesn't necessarily need to protect profit as fiercely as I will protect profit. And, you know, hopefully someday I will get to that stage where I can be a little bit, just let it try and capture some of the tops of the market. I will say I did sell wheat for $12 this year, so I'm pretty proud of that. Probably will never see that again in my career.
Good for you. Yeah.
So I do catch some of the dramatic rallies.
Gotcha. Good stuff. Okay. I want to touch this at least briefly. The funding for the Climate Smart Farming Practices, $2.8 billion from USDA. Ben, is this a I'm from the government and I'm here to help moment? Should they be staying out of this?
Well, let's talk about how you can use it. One of the things that I see with most government programs is it's kind of a chance to dip your toes in the water. The NRCS and FSA tend to offer programs that get capped out in terms of number of dollars or acres you can get. Mm-hmm. And also, one of the most frequent criticisms of adopting practices is they're not free. Farmers, even now we're back to close to production cost economics, because even with better grain prices, the inputs have come up, machinery has come up, labor has come up, fuel has come up, and we're back to close to production cost economics. So where do you find money to change your production system? Well, here it is. This is your R&D budget, and it'll give you a chance to try things on your farm, like how to implement a cover crop or reintroduce livestock or try things with reduced inputs. And what you got to get set for is layering. The market for voluntary carbon is beyond what most farmers appreciate.
Yeah.
Corporate America has set as an ESG goal. You know, they printed it behind the picture of the smiling chairman in the annual report, that they're going to offset so much carbon or be carbon neutral, and they've got to get it somewhere. Here's your chance. It's 1940, and here's a bag of soybeans. Try them. It might be a new crop for you. Anyway, this is your chance to do a little R&D and try it.
Excellent. Michelle, I've got 30 seconds for you on this. Your interest in the carbon markets?
I mean, I'm interested, like, certainly some reservations on how we roll it out. And absolutely for, like, the Climate Smart coming out of the CCC, there's certainly some concerns there. But I think that, as always, rulemaking matters, and we're going to have to see how they roll it out and what they roll out.
Gotcha. Good stuff. Good stuff from both of you. Ben, thank you so much for making time for us this morning. Be safe out there, okay, buddy?
Take care, Chip. Thank you.
All right. You bet. Michelle, thank you so much. Be safe.
Thanks. Thanks for coming, having me back.
You bet. Glad that you were here. All right. Thank you for listening this morning. You got to come back this afternoon. Going to have a conversation with Brian Split from agmarket.net right here on AgriTalk.